This is Javier Ramirez, and I own a small business called Agile CFOs. We are a virtual accounting company. We help companies move into the accounting world. We are located in Tampa, Florida, and you are listening to Small Biz Florida from the Florida SBDC at Indian River State College.
This is Small Biz Florida, the podcast designed and produced specifically for Florida small business owners and entrepreneurs. Small Biz Florida, talk that works for Florida. This podcast is supported by the Florida SBDC Network, providing the tools, strategies, and expertise to help Florida's business community thrive. Visit the Florida SBDC online at www.floridasbdc.org or contact your local office and get started on your path to success today.
This is Small Biz Florida, the podcast that's all things business across the state of Florida. And for those of you who have been tuning in recently, all these episodes and segments have been coming to you from the 10th Annual Small Business Leadership Conference here in Orlando, Florida. The Small Business Leadership Conference is created and brought to the small business community by the Jim Moran Institute at Florida State University. And as I like to also point out, one of the primary sponsors of the event is the Florida SBDC Network. I am Tom Kindred, your host for Small Biz Florida and the regional director of the Florida SBDC at Indian River State College. As we've, as you've heard, we've had some great guests on Small Biz Florida, a lot of presenters and sponsors here of the Small Business Leadership Conference, and I've got one of those sponsors today with us, a good friend. He's done this show a couple of times. It's Mr. Bernie Dandridge with Florida Capital Bank. Bernie, thanks again for taking time to be with us on Small Biz Florida.
Very welcome, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
Bernie, you have been to our center. You've come down to Fort Pierce. We've talked about capital access on a number of occasions. You are a very experienced banker, lender within the state of Florida. You represent and work on some very unique lending programs. So, again, great resource for our center. We appreciate all of your support for our center.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
So let's talk capital access. As you and I have spoken many times, getting access to capital at the right time is just critical for a small business and for them to scale up, for them to expand operations, buy inventory, respond to market growth, build a new building. I mean, just critical for a business to grow and succeed, not just in Florida, but anywhere. Talk to us about that concept, about capital access for a small business.
Well, let me take it from a banker perspective and say, you know, capital access is how, and making loans is how we make a living. You know, it's how we create income for the bank. It's a very, very important thing from the banker's perspective. But from the banker's perspective, it's also important to make good loans. So we're looking for good opportunities with good borrowers. And that's why I believe the SBDC is so important, because of the partnership that I have with my SBDC consultants and the people that I work with, like your center and others around the state. You know, it's really, really important for small business owners to be involved. With learning, growing, getting consultative help. But the the bank today is making great loans with both the SBA 7A program due to the COVID situation, some of the legislation with COVID right now. Through the end of September of this year, the SBA is not charging their SBA guarantee fee, which is a little over 3% to the borrower. So that's a savings to their transaction. To the bank, on the bank side, the banks are being given a 90% guarantee from the SBA. This is all part of the legislation. People can read it in the law. So this isn't a secret. There are opportunities there to do loans. Now, just because we're getting a 90% guarantee doesn't mean that we make a dumb loan, or God forbid that we do a loan where we actually put people in danger. You know, we don't want to do a loan where we actually hurt somebody by lending them money. We want to make sure they're prepared and ready for that transaction. But it does mean that there is some more enthusiasm and excitement from the bank because the bank has less at risk. Right. So, we're very, very interested. And I'll tell you right now, with all the growth going on in Florida, that I'm busier than I've ever been, Tom. And the diversity of the number of the different types of loans is really interesting. The different industries, the different types of businesses owned by, husbands and wives and partners and just all kinds of different structures. Right now today, I'm looking at a hotel loan. At the same time, I'm looking at a startup for a nurse practitioner. I'm looking at a startup down in Naples of a business that does distribution for housewares and things like that. We're looking at all kinds of different businesses. We just made a large loan to a gentleman who's building a new truck stop on I-75. It's about a $5.5 million transaction. We're doing that with USDA. There's so many different things and different ways that you can do loans today, and people need to communicate and ask about it. Be aware of what's available in your market. Yeah.
Let's talk about the marketplace a little bit. It's obvious. None of us need to know. It's been a pretty tough year for small business owners and operators. 2020, we're seeing a little relief in all of this, a little return to business. What are you seeing in terms of access to capital? And I think you you've talked a little bit about it just now about lots of volume. You've talked about the SBA lending, which we kind of understand. There is that guarantee, but easier, more difficult to get access to capital now in the state of Florida? What are we seeing there?
Well, I think the issue is preparation. It's preparation. You as a borrower, if you go into the transaction, you're prepared. You're going to have a much smoother transition, a much smoother process. Let me give you a quick story. I have a gentleman that he and his wife have applied for an SBA loan, and they sent me a package. When I looked at the package, there was four or five different documents that list the loan amount requested, and every one of them was different. So I'm asking myself and asking them, okay, exactly what is it you're trying to borrow and what are you trying to do? I had to package it, pull it all back together and send it to them and say, could you make it all match? And, that sounds simple, but people are not as prepared as they should be. And these were folks that you would think would, have it all right together, but it wasn't. So I would say the first thing is, be prepared. The other part about it is that the SBA requires a 10% equity injection on the total project cost of every transaction as a minimum. So what does that mean? Project cost includes not only the real estate if you're purchasing it or the build out of a leasehold property if you're doing a leasehold build out, but it also includes things like working capital and how many months is it going to take before you're ready to be profitable. The SBA says the number one reason for small business failure is lack of working capital. Well, what does that mean? That means that we understand that once you sign that piece of paper, it's going to take a certain number of months, maybe weeks, but normally months, before you hit a profitability point. So we need to provide a buffer for that period of time. We also need to think about the fact that there's closing cost involved. Let's build that into the total project cost. So you may say, well, gosh, for me to get into this leasehold or for me to buy this real estate is going to cost, $200,000. But by the time you add in all the different things, maybe you're at $250,000, maybe you're at $300,000, maybe you're at $400,000. And these are the things that you need to be prepared to handle. So, when you're at a $400,000 and you have to put 10% equity in, there you got $40,000, you can borrow the remaining balance.
I think at least in our marketplace, we're starting to see some movement in terms of maybe some legacy businesses, folks saying, you know what, maybe it's time for me to sell, mm-hmm. time for me to retire. After kind of the tough year we had in 2020, maybe they've said, I've had enough of small business ownership. Can't stand much more of this fun. So I think there's going to be opportunity for business acquisition. Where is bank lending specifically? Maybe your organization. Is there money out there to acquire businesses?
Sure. There is money out there ready to acquire. There's a lot of things you have to look at with acquisitions. And just to hit on a few of them, these are a couple of things that I ran into with a recent acquisition. We had a situation where a gentleman brought a pretty good size acquisition to it, about $3 million. And the problem was that I said to him, I said, look, what is your, what about the contracts that this gentleman has, the existing business owner? What about the contracts? Are there any concentrations of clients? In other words, are just some of these customers that he has, are they controlling the his total revenue? And what if those customers aren't willing to come over with a new owner? Maybe there's existing contracts, and those contracts do not allow for a transfer of ownership of the business. So I said, you need to go back and look at those contracts on the customers. He did, and what he found out was that the customers, once the business was sold, those contracts were null and void. So that meant that he would have to go back and resell those clients. So if you're a current business owner today and you're sitting here listening to Tom and I talk and you think, well, gosh, you know, I was thinking about maybe putting my business up for sale and calling Tom and having him help me do that. Well, one of the things you want to look at is your contracts with your clients.
Right.
And you may go to your customers and talk to them and say, hey, you know, hey, I'm getting to be in my 60s, or maybe you're in your 70s and you're saying, you know, gosh, you know, my family doesn't want to buy the business from me. I want to see it continue on. I've put together something that has value. Then get together with Tom and let's say, hey, evaluate those contracts, then go to those customers and say, hey, let's redo this contract. Be honest with them. Tell them that you're thinking about this, and you'd like to get them on your side. Maybe they could provide some input. Maybe you could build a greater sense of loyalty because they're going to be on the team for the transition.
Right.
So that's one thing that I've run into just recently. Another quick story. I'll tell this fast. We had a gentleman who did a large business acquisition, and you could do these things that are small, but one of the things we always talk about is the fact that you need to have some sort of a non-compete agreement with the current employees. And the reason is because if you sell the business and there's an individual there who knows all the customers, especially if it's a B2B, a business-to-business type of a transaction, then it's possible maybe one of those guys would go out and start their own company, and next thing you know, they're pilfering those customers. We had an SBA loan at our bank that had that very very situation. And sadly, the person who was the new owner of the company did not have a relationship with the SBDC. He did not go over and have a conversation and try to troubleshoot all these potential problem areas. And as a result, when it was made known in the company that he was going to acquire the business, one of the people in the company decided to go start their own LLC, and then they started pilfering the company, the customers. And at the end, when the loan was closed, everybody had signed on the dotted line. All of a sudden, one day, they find out that, you know, John Doe had gone out and stolen over a third of all the business. And long story, very short, that particular business sadly went into bankruptcy.
Wow. Let's talk about, a very common conversation we have. You know, there's obviously an understanding from those of us who have been in business and bankers and we walk a fine line in trying to be aggressive with our taxes, trying to be aggressive with our expenses and managing the financials. But when it comes to lending, there's sometimes a little different viewpoint. We want to see some strong profit in the business because profit's the way we make our bank loans. So many times we meet with clients and they're struggling to get that loan. And a big reason why is they're not profitable.
Right.
And so, of course, we have that discussion and the business owner says, oh, no, I'm profitable. I just don't show it on my taxes. Kind of address that issue. I mean, How's that going to play at the bank when they're trying to get a loan?
Yeah, well, the only way that the bank can verify that you have income is by looking at a tax return. And I understand that you don't want to pay taxes. Lord, I don't like paying taxes. Who does? But the reality is that if you're the business owner, you have a responsibility to either grow your business or maintain it. I mean, if you're where you want it to be, fine. But if you're in a growth mode, or, you know, if you're in a growth mode, then you are going to have to put yourself in a situation where you're showing those tax returns. Also, think about this. If you want to sell the company, if you want to sell the business, the future owner of that company needs 3 years worth of your tax returns on the company. So if you say, well, you know, hey, I've owned it for 30 years and it's made me a lot of money, but I didn't show anything. Well, now all of a sudden, the way that you're going to get paid on the business is going to be a reflection of the tax return income. So even if you've been in business for a long time and you're not showing the income, when you go to sell it, you're not going to make what you should have made. All right. Now, let's talk about from a lending perspective. If you come into the bank and you tell me, you know, that you make, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, but oh no, when you look at your tax return, it looks like your revenue is not to where you could make 100. And that may be because you get paid cash. And maybe you take that and you just stick it in your pocket and you don't tell anybody. Well, you know, that's a decision that you've made to, you know, show what you're paying or what you're getting paid in front to Uncle Sam, and that's all I can lend on. Now, I've been a commission-paid person most of my business life, and, you know, we made a decision many, many years ago that, hey, if you're going to buy a home, if you're going to do anything like that, you have to show your income. And, you know, if you don't show it, then you don't got it. It's right. Just that simple, Tom. And it's important to think about it, folks, for two reasons. Again, number one, if you're not interested in selling your business, but you're a younger person maybe and just starting, you need to show it for growth purposes or for expansion purposes. You also need to show it if you're an older person, you're getting ready to sell the business. You're going to have to show that so that when you sell it, you can get everything you've put into it. Right. You know, I have to have 3 years of business tax return on the business that's being sold. And if there's not an income there, you know,
right,
you're not going to get what you should have.
As we kind of begin to kind of close in on the end of the segment here, talk to us a little bit about Florida Capital Bank. What's the footprint of the bank? And I don't think your bank is really a traditional bank in the sense that there's a lot of brick and mortar, but you can work pretty much across the state. Is that correct?
Right. Our bank is pretty interesting. I mean, we were a $1 billion-plus asset bank back before the crash of 08, 09, and 10. And then that pretty well hurt us pretty badly, as it did many banks. But we were able to survive. We were one of the very, very few that survived that were our size at the time. And we began to focus just on a few things. First of all, we cut back on our footprint, and so we actually have offices today in Jacksonville, Orlando, Gainesville, and Tampa. But that doesn't mean that we don't lend in other places, because we lend all over the state of Florida, and we lend actually SBA-wise outside of the state of Florida. Residentially, we lend all across America. But the bank today is very big, involved in the in SBA world. Here's an interesting thing we're involved in. We've just recently become very big in the hemp business. So hemp and CBD and all that. During the PPP process, I had a gentleman call me from the Orlando General Market, Central Florida. He owned he grew hemp, but he also had a CBD retail business. He got approved by the SBA for a PPP loan, but when it came time for his deposit to be made, for him to close the loan, his credit union, who approved him, said, well, we can't open an account for you. Well, it turns out that opening a deposit account is quite a process if you're into CBD. So, you know, we have a department that's all set up just to do that. And so they were able to do that, open an account for him, and I was able to get the PPP loan approved for them, and this gentleman was happy. But the bank today is involved with SBA on a 7A, format, and we do 504. We prefer to do 7A, but we do 504. We also do USDA B&I lending, business and industry lending, which is more of a rural or an agricultural-based process. I shouldn't say agricultural, it's residential, it's rural, excuse me, it's rural-based. It also will do businesses that are involved in the food industry in a metro area. We recently did a big loan for a peanut butter manufacturer right in the middle of Jacksonville. It was pretty cool. We're also in the process of being approved with USDA to do Farm Services Agency lending, the FSA. That's quite an interesting situation. So Florida has a big, big presence in the agricultural space even today, and we do have an interest in that, like to talk to people about it. But the biggest section of our lending is really in the 7A space. It's in standard conventional commercial lending. It's in real estate, as many are. But we love working with small businesses and helping them, and particularly we like partnering with the SBDC.
Okay, and you answered my last question, which is what are some of the products? So you did a great job with that, and we appreciate that. Last question, how does one find you, Bernie? How do we get in touch with you to talk about your services and your support for small businesses?
Well, they can find me at bdandridge@flcb.com. That's B-D-A-N-D-R-I-D-G-E at flcb.com. Or they can call me on my mobile at 904-993-0603. And believe me, I get calls from all over the place. So we're happy to help folks.
Well, good. Bernie, again, I can't say enough about our relationship. You have traveled from Jacksonville to Fort Pierce and the Treasure Coast a number of times to meet with clients, to meet with those who are looking to get access to capital. You've met with our team at the Florida SBDC at IRSC to keep us up to date on SBA loans, programs, and USDA loans and programs. So we appreciate your support. We appreciate what you do for the small business community across the entire state of Florida.
I appreciate that, Tom. I do want to say that, I really believe in what the SBDC does. In fact, so much so, I have two adult children, and both of them, own their own companies. I required both of them to go and consult with an SBDC consultant before they started their own businesses. And both of them have some pretty fantastic stories about money they've saved, about yes. Bumps in the road that they yes. avoided. And both of them today are successful. They became profitable very quickly. My son, his first month of business, had over $10,000 in revenue as a chiropractor, and he just has continued to excel past that. And my daughter is doing fantastic as well. And we definitely contribute a chunk of that to the SBDC. And so if you today are listening to this podcast, please take a minute, register your small business at the SBDC's website. And I know Tom's real humble about this, but, these guys are super valuable.
Yep. A lot of experience on these SBDC teams. And again, access all across the state of Florida, 9 SBDC centers across the state of Florida. So, Bernie,
thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And with that, I want you to stay tuned. There is more coming from the Small Business Leadership Conference here in Orlando, right here on Small Biz Florida.
This has been Small Biz Florida, created and produced by the Florida Small Business Development Center at Indian River State College. Your host for Small Biz Florida is Tom Kindred. Partners for Small Biz Florida include WPSL and WSTU and Indian River State College, named the 2019 winner of the Aspen Prize for Community College Excellence.